Okay, welcome to Guitar Geeks podcast. Martin Koldebru, I know I'm pronouncing your name pretty wrong, but...
That's okay, I can live with that.
You can live with that.
Yeah, that's no problem.
Yeah, so you're a sound technician, a monitor, and you're on the tour we're doing now, you're the monitor guy.
Yeah.
And we have been doing this ABBA show together for...
10-15 years.
Yeah, 10-15 years. And, yeah. Martin is by far one of the best in-ear mixer guys I've ever had. Sometimes it's like you can read my mind. So and since a lot of our guests use in-ear and a lot of our listeners also use in-ear, but a lot of guitarists aren't that comfortable using in-ears. Why do you think that is?
Well, because you'll never get exactly the same tone as a guitar amp out of in-ears.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you need to get used to it, but it's also, from my point of view, is I'm an old school monitor guy. I don't do something people don't ask me.
Yeah.
So like you have your Line 6 board and you spend hours perfecting your sound and your Line 6 board. Then it's not up to me to start changing that sound because I think it sounds wrong.
Yeah.
My job is to do what you like and then don't care about what I think about it, basically. Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of it is that you often get people who start EQing without actually listening to what they're EQing on.
All right.
Because you're supposed to EQ. No, you're not.
Yeah.
The old way of doing it is you put a mic to a source and put it into a preamp, and if it sounds wrong, you try another mic.
Yeah.
And that's a bit the same when you do in-ears, is just listen to what's coming in and talk to the people. What is it you've done with your gear? What is it you're looking for sound-wise? And communication, I think, is the most important thing for a monitor engineer.
Yeah, of course. And also, I think the big thing is the difference of hearing guitar through an amp, a guitar speaker, of course, and through... It's the same thing if you listen to headphones, headphones, or you listen to studio monitors. It's not like listening to an amp.
It'll never be the same.
It will never be the same.
So, of course, there's some getting used to it. But there's also a thing in it that I sometimes say, and people get a bit upset with me because it shouldn't be their problem, but you spend how much on guitars?
Lots of money.
Yeah. And then you go out and spend 2,000 kroner of a pair of cheap in-ears.
Yeah, exactly.
So... if this is a part of your setup, why don't buy something that's good?
Yeah.
Because there is a difference or a synonym between price and quality.
Of course there is.
So if you buy cheap in-ears, they'll never sound as good as the expensive one. So I also think that's a part of it.
I think that's a big part too. When if you get a pair of, I don't know, the standard Shure ones, It's a big difference too.
At least you need to get up to, I think, I can't remember where I start, but Raoul always says your minimum needs to go for the 535, which is the four-driver one.
Yeah.
Because you also get a more detailed sound. And especially for guitar players, I think that's very important.
Yeah.
And then it's a mix of listening to your amps and knowing what they sound like, so you kind of have an idea of how to explain that.
Yeah.
Saying I need more top or I need more bottom or it's a bit muddy or so you have some words, try and find some words for,
so you can explain what you're lacking or what you're
what you're missing in your sound.
So and the thing with drivers in ears, is it, could you say generally speaking that if more drivers gives more headroom and detail?
Yeah, it gives you a better... It divides the sound better, so it gets more details. Yeah.
Yeah. So each speaker has to do less.
I think if you have like four drivers, you have like two low, a mid, and a high.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, if you just get a one driver, it's just like it can't reproduce sound in the same way.
No.
So especially with in-ears, I don't say don't do like you and me and spend 12,000 on a pair of, if you're only using five times a year, but at least use like 3,000-4,000 on a decent pair of in-ears. And don't expect the guys to have decent ones. We've flown all over the world, and I bring 535s with me because I can't get them anywhere.
No.
Because rental companies buy the cheapest one they can get because they expect people to have their own.
Yeah.
So at least if you're a guitar player, do yourself a favor and spend a little bit of money on buying a decent pair of in-ears.
Yeah, for me, it's been a big thing. It makes a whole lot of difference.
It does. But you know from when you go in and record in a studio, if you have a crap pair of headphones when you're recording, it sounds like crap.
Yeah, of course. And what you said, like, how much money do you spend on guitars and guitar gear? And then the thing you're listening to is $100.
Exactly. It's like when you spend ₱1,000,000 on mixing a fucking perfect sounding record, but all your fans go around with AirPods in.
Yeah.
There's some things you have to consider during that.
So those Shures are that's a good like.
I use them. I always use them for people who don't have their own.
Yeah.
And I found that I can make most people happy with them. I was using Westone for a while, but the consumer Westone one found out was faster to distort in the bottom end.
All right.
So if you fed a lot of kick or bass into them and started distorting in the bottom end, and I haven't had that problem with the Shures.
Yeah.
So the 535, this is not a commercial, but I think that's the least people should buy.
Yeah.
I think in Sweden they're about. I think the other said about 3,500 or something like that.
Yeah,
and that's not a lot of spend to get your 15,000 kroner guitar sounding good.
Totally. And any other makes or models that you can recommend that's maybe a little more expensive or?
Well, both Ultimate Ears and JH Audio, who's the two big companies who do molded ears. Has consumer ones now as well.
Yeah.
And I know people who swear to them because they think they close better than the molded ones.
Yeah.
And the new ones from them sound pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's like all tech, I guess it evolves too.
I know a lot of you Swedes started using 64 audio. I haven't ever heard them, so I don't know them. But I'm pretty sure they make a decent pair as well.
Yeah, I think so too.
All the big brands make decent consumer ones as well too.
Yes, I think so too.
Between 3,000 and 5,000 or something like that.
What would you say is the biggest difference between having a molded pair of headphones and a non-molded?
For me personally, I can have the molded ones in for a longer time.
Yeah.
If I have the consumer ones with the foam plugs, I often feel like after 2, 3, 4 hours it starts annoying my ear.
Yeah.
So for me it's. But I have especially singers prefer the foam ones because the molded ones has a tendency to slip a little bit when you open your mouth.
Yeah.
And the foam ones doesn't. So for singers, often foam ones are better.
Yeah.
And then it's easy to change the size. The molded ones, if you look at what they actually say, you should actually change your molded one every 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
Because your ear's changing.
Yeah.
And you get over that hump with using consumer ones with foam buds.
Yes.
But I've had mine for 6 years and they're still good.
So, yeah, I've had mine for 6 or even 7 years and they're still.
Yeah.
But
it's also up to start with the consumer one and if you like it, get the molded. But I prefer the molded one. They just fit my ear better.
Yeah, I feel that too. And for me, I have my ears are my they're kind of small, so I had to push my consumer ones in all the time. So I got like I got sore in my ears from pushing it all night.
And I have the same because I'm popping mine in and out all the time.
Yeah, of course.
So the molded one just I like that. But I think you can get. Ones with foam tip now that sounds just as good, pretty much. Of course, I don't think you can get a consumer 16 driver, but you can get a 8-10 driver consumer thing at JH or Ultimate Ears. So.
Yeah, I know. I'm on the JH still, and I like them a lot.
Yeah.
What are you using?
I'm using Ultimate Ears, but yeah. That's because I was with a band for many years that used Ultimate Ears. So yeah. I think I'm going for JH next time.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of the guy who invented the Ultimate Ears.
Yeah, he is.
So.
Yeah.
And he has some new models that looks pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I think Tua that's been on the podcast too. He's yeah. I think he's got the most expensive ones.
Yeah.
Too. Here's Lasse, the guitar player.
Hi, Lasse.
No, yeah. But I think 64 Audio, they actually have a showroom in Stockholm where you can listen to all their phones with consumer things, and then they do molds too. So I think it's
go do that.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have the option, go do it.
Yeah.
Listen to them.
Yeah.
Because and find what you think fits you, because not everybody has the same way of listening to things.
No, that's true.
I did an old Danish guitar player years ago. Per Frost was his name. He played with Gnax and all the old Danish artists. He died a couple of years ago. When I was doing in-ears for him, he hated in-ears.
Yeah.
But what we actually did was he was so used to hearing his amps from a distance. So beside close miking him, we actually did ambience mics live on his guitar amps.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Because he was so used to not having it straight in his ears. So we actually put a condenser mic a meter from his amps.
Yeah.
To give him that feeling of diffusion that he was used to hearing.
Yeah.
And that's also things you can play with.
Yeah.
Play with new ways of miking things up.
Yeah.
There's no facet list to how to do things.
No.
So play with it.
Yeah.
And ask your sound guy to play with it if you're not happy.
Yeah.
Instead of, I'm not happy and throw it away, say, okay, this is not working for me. What can we try?
Yeah. And I found when miking amps, even if it's just a single amp, using two mics and maybe pan them a bit and the sound a bit different, that makes a whole lot.
But the same with an acoustic guitar. If you're playing an acoustic guitar in in-ears, delay it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there's a meter from the guitar to your ear.
Yeah.
So you're used to hearing it a little bit delayed.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you don't get that feeling of, oh, it's poking into my ear.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's often what I get from guitar players, is that it's straight in my ear. I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
So play with ambience mics, play with a little bit of delay, not just 1-2 milliseconds. Just how far is it from my ear?
Yeah.
It's about a meter. Well, that's 3 milliseconds.
Yeah. I actually put a really small, not even room, it's reverb on my acoustic. It's called ambience.
Yeah.
And the only thing that happens when I click it out is that it feels too close.
Yeah.
And it doesn't disturb anyone else's or Andy that makes front houses sound.
No.
So I think, I've... More mics and panning is the way to go for.
It's
for
always the thing with in-ears is if everything's in the middle, it's just gonna get this big thick sausage that goes in, and you can't divide things from each other, and that also tends to make you play too loud.
Yeah,
and you get tired in your head because you can't distance things from each other. So panning is a big part of it.
Yeah, of course.
Creating space. Basically,
And for me, a big thing too is pan it so it makes sense.
Where
people are on stage.
I'm actually on the tour I'm doing this summer. We're gonna try this new clang system, which is kind of a 3D monitoring.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it yet. I'm getting it in for the production rehearsal, and we're gonna play with it. So I'm pretty excited to see what that does.
Cool. I'm going to call you and talk about it. I have friends who've used it and they love it.
Yeah.
So I think that might be the next step of...
My only problem with it is that I discussed with another monitor engineer friend of mine is if I'm taking too much dynamic out of the band so it hurts the front of house guy. For me, that's also a big thing for me when I mix monitors. I don't use compression.
No.
Yes, I do if I do a local school band who doesn't know how to play. Yeah. But if I have good musicians... It shouldn't be me compressing. They should control their own dynamic.
Yeah.
And I disturb that dynamic by start compressing stuff in their in-ears.
Yeah.
And that hurts them and their way of playing together, and it hurts the front of house guys' way of doing sound.
Yeah.
So even with in-ears, my approach to doing monitors is, like I learned it in the old days, is less is more.
Yeah.
If I can get away with doing nothing to a channel, that's the best. Just gain and turn it up.
Yeah.
Low cut it, turn it up. Yeah. That's.
Yeah.
And again, if you have a digital board with XLRs out, you spend hours doing your sound, then that's how that should sound, unless you tell me something else.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So that's my problem with Clang, is if I'm going to disturb the dynamics in the band by start moving people around. But I don't know yet, because I haven't tried it. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We have a light that
keeps turning off.
Now I can see you again.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, podcast in the dark.
Yeah. No, so it's really delay, panning, ambience.
Yeah.
It's things that makes your in-ear not sound as clinical.
Yeah. And is there like other tips that you can think of that might, one that for me is a big thing, I can't, if I have too much bass or kick, it kind of eats up the headroom of everything. Because I sometimes feel that it's hard to fit everything.
Yeah.
Especially when on this production, you're a big band and it's a lot of people singing and a lot of people. We're a 10-piece band. So.
Yeah. I will say on this band, I use more compression than I do if I do a 5-piece rock band.
Yeah.
Also because we have some singers that's pretty wildly dynamic.
Yeah.
But I could also, you could, like, I play with sometimes, I use a multi-band compression on the master send.
Yeah.
So I can compress the bottom end, for example, to give more space. Or it's a bit harsh today, then I can compress the high end a little bit, but on the whole send, so it's not the individual channel I'm doing it on.
Okay, I totally get that. Because then you can have like a fuller bass sound, but when it's full on, it ducks a bit.
It ducks the bottom end a little bit, so it doesn't take up as much space.
Yeah.
And that's a good tool when you have a lot of sound.
Yeah. And if what's the difference for, let's say, for a singer, for you, how does the mix differ? And of course, there's a lot more voice, but do you have to think about panning and making room in a different way for a singer?
No, I pretty much do the same for everybody.
Yeah.
I just use their voice as their instrument, like I use your instrument for you.
Yeah.
I do the same. But a lot of singers tend to have a lot more voice than everything else.
Yeah.
And that's also a dangerous thing, because then you all of a sudden is out of the band.
Yeah.
So it's always, and you always have the singers that takes out one ear, and I always say that's because your mix isn't right.
Yeah.
And it's very, very unhealthy for you.
Yeah.
It's not good for your hearing to have that difference. And I see people do it all the time, and I'm just thinking, oh.
Yeah, me too, because, and I've tried it, and I get like almost seasick.
Yeah.
The sound hitting your eardrums at a different time, because one is coming from the room and the stage and the other is directly in your ear.
I don't get that people can do that. But and I always advise people not to do it and work on the mix instead.
Yeah. And I found that too when the first gigs I did playing lap steel or pedal steel in ears, I thought like maybe I should have a bit more myself so I can like pitch better. But then what happened was I had nothing to relate to.
No.
So it's almost the opposite, actually.
Yeah. And we had on this tour for a few days. It's actually very good. She doesn't have a lot of herself.
Yeah.
She basically has a mix, a record mix with herself.
Cool.
All the other singers pretty much have themselves way above.
Yeah.
And then it's also working with the EQ, because as a singer you have to think, how does my voice sound in my head? Not coming out of my mouth, but what am I hearing in my head? Because that's what I want to hear in my headphones.
Yeah.
And that's what I would, Camilla spend a lot of time figuring out, because if Camilla, the lead singer on this tour, if you look at her EQ and don't know her and don't know what we're doing, you would think, what the fuck's going on here? But that's to hit her voice like she hears it in her head.
Yeah.
And that's very important for me, because
Of course.
It's not always good. It's the best. You need to figure out what works for each person.
Yeah.
And it's the same if you do a full mix. You can't have everything sound like Cream, because
no.
then you can't pick things out. So you have to think, okay, I need to fit this in here. What can I cut out or put in to make it fit in?
Yeah, of course.
So I have room for everything in this mix.
Yeah. And is with vocals, do you have, if there is a resonance in your head, and especially if you have something in your ears, you hear your voice kind of inside yourself too. That might also affect like how it sounds in your ears, I guess.
Yeah, of course. And that's what I mean with trying to figure out what
in the dark again.
What how people hear their own voice.
Yeah.
In their head.
Yeah.
And try and get as close to that as possible.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes a challenge, but I found that often gives the best results.
Yeah.
Instead of me, now this sounds like beautiful Cream and I had a Polish jazz singer once who came down to me and actually said that my voice has never sounded better. I can't concentrate. Can you make me sound like shit, please?
He wanted to work for it.
Yeah, she really wanted to work for it, or else she couldn't concentrate. And I think that's where I started thinking of mixing vocals in a different way.
Yeah.
Because, of course, that's not how she hears her voice.
No.
So, of course, it some likes it sounding brilliantly, but most people actually go for, what do I hear in my head when I hear my voice?
Yeah, of course. And the mix is, it's supposed to make you be able to do your job the best you can. So, of course, it's very individual.
And that's the biggest thing I'm trying to teach younger guys when I have them. It doesn't matter what you think, how you think it sounds.
Yeah.
It's all about that person in on stage. You're there to do what they want. And then you should really don't care about what you think about it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you agree and sometimes you don't. But it's not my job to tell you what you should hear. It's my job to make you hear the best possible way for you to do your job.
Yeah. No, and it's like if for my guitar sound for this is... It's absolutely on the bright side.
Yeah.
But I need that to cut through.
Yeah.
And to make it to make it poke through the mix. And that makes me more comfortable playing.
Yeah.
Because if it's too dull,
you disappear in all the other stuff.
Yes. And that makes me, then I play too hard.
Yeah.
And then that doesn't sound good. And my hands get tired. It's so weird because you think, when you don't hear yourself as a guitar player, you would hit harder, but you also squeeze harder with your left hand. So
that's a natural reaction.
I guess like, oh, I have to run faster. So when that makes me play more relaxed, actually. So, and for acoustic guitar, it's a big thingy too. I think if you're kind of loud, you play softer, and that will make a acoustic guitar sound better when it's not mic'd in the only line. It's because that's a special thing, as we all know.
Yeah. You can never make a perfect sound of an acoustic instrument with a pickup.
No,
it's
never always a compromise.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
and then I think a big thing about it is communication, not like you and me, but have your focus on stage.
Yeah.
I did this big band years ago in the music house I was working in at this point, which was Liza Minnelli with a big band.
Yeah.
And as they came off stage, they all passed me and shook my hand. And I turned to the MD and said, what was that all about? You're the first guy on this tour who didn't touch the desk after soundcheck unless we asked you to. And every time we looked at you, we had eye contact. We've been a whole tour where every time we looked at the monitor board, the guy was standing with his head looking down in the board, fiddling with knobs.
Yeah.
Without us asking for it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest part of being a good monitor engineer is have your focus on stage.
Yeah. That makes sense. Total sense.
And after soundcheck, if people are happy at soundcheck, you shouldn't change anything unless they ask you to.
Yeah.
Or you hear something that's completely off the charts.
Or
something.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the main things that a lot of young guys haven't learned yet.
Yeah.
They're so used to, oh, I'm mixing, I'm putting wave plugins on.
And I think it's out of ambition. It's like they're working.
Yeah.
They're going to work it.
We're going to produce this in-ear mix. Yeah. But you, that's wrong. Don't do that.
No.
That fucks yourself up. So that's, I think, is my biggest advice to especially young monitor engineers.
Yeah.
Learn to have focus on stage and stop, stop mixing monitors.
All the sense, yeah.
Unless people ask you.
Yeah.
There are bands who likes that you mix during the show and stuff. Yeah. But then they'll ask you to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're a guitar player and you want to talk like sound guy language, what should you ask for if you say, I want more body in my guitar? Is there...
Well, body is a pretty good word for it.
Yeah.
But
if you want to be like more specific, is it like 200 to 400 or?
Yeah. I would probably say I wouldn't go into frequencies because they'll change from room to room.
Yeah.
But if I want more body in my guitar, I would say I would like some more low mid.
Yeah.
Or if it's more attack or scream, it's high mid.
Yeah.
Or if it's the finer sizzly stuff, highs.
And yeah.
So basically, we divide it in four: low mid, high mid, and highs.
Yeah.
And if you can narrow it into those four, you're far into talking to a sound guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Where low is like, that's from nothing till like 120, 130. Yeah. And then low mids are from 130 to 500, 600. And then high mids from there to 2.5K.
Yeah.
And highs over that.
Yeah.
Because if you start with specific frequencies, if you're not a sound engineer, it can really fuck stuff up.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And yeah, because I think, sometimes when I've seen people's EQing, like, because I've sometimes helped, or like, you know, when you inherit a mix as a producer, and you see these really narrow bands, like dips everywhere, it's like, kind of makes stuff sound hollow.
Yeah.
Because that's, unless there's a treble frequency and your guitar is feedbacking, but that's maybe more for if you're on loud wedges or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing with digital today. Actually, a good training exercise is if you're sitting doing EQs on something, put a piece of paper over the screen. Don't look at the screen.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing sound with your eyes. Listen
true
to what
that.
You're doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So cover the screen. Don't. I'm pretty sure if we saw pictures of the EQs we're doing on analog desks in the old days, we'd go, "What the fuck's going on there?
Did I boost that?"
and that's what the screen has done these days. Is that looks way too much. Yeah, but does it sound right?
Yeah, exactly.
Use your ears, not your eyes.
Yeah.
And a good training, I know. You can't. You've probably done the same with tones and stuff. But I did a lot as a young monitor engineer, where I would sit in a studio with a graphic equalizer, and just pick noise and just boost frequencies.
Yeah.
And a sheet of paper, write down which frequency I'm boosting of.
Yeah.
Or de-docking. And then after doing it with pink noise for a while, put music on, do the same.
Yeah.
Learn to hear where the frequencies are in the music.
Yeah.
Like you would do with tones.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And it's like you can put a song in your DAW and put a high pass and a low pass and see what happens when you take stuff out. It's very interesting, actually.
Yeah, no, we did a lot. Or I did a lot just to actually from the wet stage to be able to find feedbacks.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's kind of funny. We had that in Denmark when I was a kid. Prøvebillede.
Yeah.
You know, that picture, like, when there's nothing on your TV,
and touch screen,
tone, and that's actually a perfect 1K.
Oh, I didn't know that.
If you have that tone in your head, you can always say, is it above or under that?
Yeah,
and then you're getting into knowing what the frequencies are.
Yeah,
because that tone was so constant, and everybody knew it.
Yeah,
so that's
a good
kind
one.
Of my reference point for frequency.
Because you can. That's like ear training, but frequencies, like you did with the pink noise and with music and that.
Yeah. But again, back to low, mid, high, mid, high.
Yeah, yeah.
it's a good starting point if you want to.
Yeah.
And yeah, get people to play with your sound if you're not happy.
Yeah.
Try something new.
Yeah.
Oh, we always use 57th for guitar. Yeah, but my guitar amp sounds shit with a 57. Can we try something else?
Yeah.
Can we put a 421 on it? Can we put a condenser mic on it? Can we
906 or
whatever. Yeah. Just do something
414,
else.
414, yeah.
If you're not happy.
Yeah.
And if you do a line board or a Kembo or whatever, make sure it sounds like you want it when you go out the door, and then ask them to start with a flat EQ.
Yeah.
Don't touch the EQ.
Yeah.
Until we find out if I'm happy with my sound.
Yeah.
Maybe low cut it to space some room, say low cut it at 100.
Yeah.
Because guitar shouldn't play under 100.
No.
But besides that, just leave it flat and then say to him, leave it flat till we get started, because this board sounds like I want it to sound.
Yeah.
And then when you're doing the sounds, actually use your in-ears.
Yes, that's a biggie too.
Yeah.
Because
I know you can't do that with an amp, but if you're playing a digital board.
Oh, yeah.
Use what you would use on stage to do your sounds with, because I can never make your in-ear sounds like your very expensive studio monitors at home.
No. And your iPods won't sound like any in-ears either, so.
Use the hearing you're going to use it with.
Yeah.
It's a big thing as well.
Yeah. No, and I think that's actually a big thing. One of my best friends, we talked about this a lot, and he hates in-ears. And I'm like, yeah, well, you should get a pair of good headphones, good in-ears, and you will be so much happier with the...
Yeah, with the sound.
With the sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and if you compare, like, some people use... like both wedges and in-ears? Have you done any of those like gigs, or you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah.
I think it's stupid. Yeah. Why do a loud stage when you have in-ears?
Yeah.
Oh, but we like that there's some physics. But come on. If I should do something with physics, I would just put side fills in and just use the subs.
Yeah. Because that's pretty much what, if you want something, you want to feel it.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't hear anything of the sound coming out of the...
You would if they play loud, but then they have to play bloody loud.
Screamingly loud.
And then it's just getting stupid.
Yeah.
And then it's just getting bad for the front of house guy.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden the purposes of in-ears of getting the stage volume down disappear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I have to play wedges so loud they can hear them over their in-ears.
Yeah.
So I don't like it.
No.
If you've missed physics, put in a couple of subs.
Yeah.
Or get... They made these butt kickers for drummers at a point. And actually they did, for bass players, they did a plate with a butt kicker on that they could stand on.
Yeah. That works.
Or I do it on the other band. I put a sub under the drummer.
Yeah.
Just... There's no reason to get all the low mid, high mid, highs screaming on stage if you're on in-ears.
No, because you can't hear those frequencies anyway.
If you do, you're playing too loud anyway.
No, and it's still like, even if you switch your belt pack off and you have your ears in, you don't hear that much treble anyway.
No.
Because it's like, put your fingers in your ear and see what you hear.
Yeah.
It won't be your guitar sound or your whatever.
Oh, I like my guitar sound now. But it's fucking loud. Yeah, but it needs to be that loud. And then you put in the yellow earplugs because it's too loud, but it sounds good. But then it doesn't sound good for you.
No.
So why don't try and make your sound good when you play on a volume you actually can stand?
Use, and be
in front of.
Yeah.
And the same with in-ears.
Yeah.
Make your sound with your in-ears.
Yeah.
And go out and play with it. Oh, I found out with my amp, it works really well with this microphone. Maybe bring it then.
Yeah.
Buy it and bring it. If you have a special mic you're happy with.
Yeah.
I say the same to singers. If you found a mic that's good for your voice, then bring it. Because as a standard on a festival or whatever, or a club, or they'll have 58s.
Yeah, of course.
And that's it.
That's it.
And it works for, but it's not perfect for everybody.
No.
And they have 57s for guitar, but it's not all guitar amps that sounds good on a 57.
Nope.
So if you find something that works, buy it yourself.
Yeah.
And bring it with you.
That's very good advice.
Yeah.
To sum it up, you can say the more ready your sound is,
yeah,
the easier it is for everybody.
Yeah, and especially for yourself. And it'll make it a lot easier for you to be happy with an in-ear sound if you're not used to using in-ears and don't like in-ears.
Yeah.
And buy your own headphones and spend some money on them.
Yeah, and I also think it's if you get your own headphones, like you said, make your tweaking on your on
the one. Use your headphones, when you're doing your sounds.
Yeah, and because front of house will probably EQ your guitars anyways to fit into the mix.
Yeah.
So I know Andy probably takes away some highs from me and, you know.
Yeah.
Add in some low mids or something. I don't know. But
I don't know what he does, but he'll do something.
He will.
Anyways, so make it sound good for your in-ears.
Yeah.
So you have a good starting point. Your guitar sounds right, then we can build the rest around that. If you're a guitar player.
Yeah.
So,
but same for if you're, maybe it's easier for bass players. It's a different. No, it's fucking pitch black.
It's funny. But it's the same for everybody. It's the same if you're a singer. If you find a mic that you think is good with your voice, buy it, bring it. Because then you have what you're used to listening to.
Yeah.
And front of house will get something out of it. But if your monitor sound isn't good, you will never play good.
No, of course not.
So, and that's what I've always had that argument with a lot of musicians. So you're in a band.
Yeah.
You start going out playing. You start playing gig. Who's the first guy you hear? Hire. Front of house guy. If I was in a band, the first guy I would hire was a monitor guy.
Yeah, totally.
Because if my stage sound isn't right, it doesn't matter how it sounds out front because we'll play bad. The front of house guy will always get something out of front.
Yeah.
So if I was a musician, the first guy on my payroll would be the monitor guy.
In my me too. Totally.
But first we hire the front of house guy, then the backline tech, then the lighting guy.
Yeah.
And then the last guy we hire is the monitor guy.
Yeah.
Which for you yourself is the most important guy.
Totally.
So it's a bit of but it's just the way people do it.
Yeah,
I don't know why. To sound good for the audience. Yeah, but what does that help if it doesn't sound good on stage?
Yeah, if you can't hear what you do or
are unhappy on stage.
So
it's actually a fun discussion.
It's super fun discussion. Well, Martin, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me and talk to our listeners about in ears. It's very interesting and you said a lot of helpful things that will.
Yeah, I hope people can use it. And
yes, I think so too. So to sum it up, get good headphones.
Yeah.
Make
your sound on them. Yeah.
And I'd say like get used to hearing music through your headphones.
So I always use my in-ears when I fly or whatever.
Yeah.
I hear music through them. I know what they sound like.
Yeah.
And learn what it is you like about your sound. Do I need more low end? Do I need more low mids?
Yeah.
Or do I make my sound? If you made the sound right, just tell the guy, keep it flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. The less he has to turn knobs, the better it is. Because it'll also make face mistakes and stuff when he starts EQing and stuff. So that should pretty much sum it up.
Yeah. And thank you so much.
No problem, man. Then we have to go do a sound check.
Let's go do a sound check.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Bye. No problem. Bye.